All right, welcome to another WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. I've got another NCAA podcast for you with TD and Kirk. But first, we're going to cover a little bit of current events. The Cleveland Browns bid adieu to Phil Dawson. Everybody seems to have been really busy today, so we all kind of caught up on the news late. But I'll start with you, TD. Any initial thoughts on the loss of Phil Dawson?
I mean, like everybody else, you know, it's funny. I had a tweet from my cousin who is a sophomore at Penn. And he tweeted out, I follow him, and he said, you know, I don't know what's sadder, the fact that Phil Dawson is gone or the fact that he's my all-time favorite Brown of my lifetime, which is basically showing how bad the Browns have been in his lifetime.
At least it wasn't Chris Gardocki.
That's true. Or Dave Zastadil. Or Reggie Hodges, for that matter. But, I'm sad like everybody else. But, you know, this regime, you know, they keep pointing out they want guys who are, you know, young and inexpensive and not at the backsides of their career. And I don't care how old you are as a kicker. Phil Dawson was kicking 50-yard field goals regularly and nailing them regularly all year. Since 1999, people don't realize until, you know, you've kicked in Cleveland Brown Stadium or whatever it's called now, how hard it is with the winds. And Phil Dawson was the absolute master. And for me, it's this simple. They're going to bring in somebody who they're probably either going to draft a kicker or sign somebody off the street who's going to be young and inexpensive. And he's going to have no shot. And no matter what happens, the first field goal he misses, everybody's going to boo him. And it's going to be in this guy's head. It's just going to happen. It's just the way it is. And I'm sad to see him go, but I'm thrilled for him as a person that he's going to a place in San Francisco where he has a chance to win a Super Bowl, because nobody deserves it more than he does.
All right, Kirk.
Yep. I would just have to, kind of echo what T said. As someone who, quite honestly, doesn't remember the Browns without a kicker number 4 from Texas on the team. It definitely is a little bit heartbreaking. The thing I would have to point to is what I hope is going to happen, and I kind of think it's going to go along the lines of what TD's saying. You know, he's going to win a Super Bowl in San Francisco, and, you know, everyone's going to feel happy for him. At the same time, you're just going to feel bad that he couldn't at least make the playoffs with us again. And, you know, what I hope happens is that we get at least a marginal kicker where, you know, he's not Phil, he's not a Pro Bowler, but he, you know, doesn't kill us like Billy Cundiff killed the Ravens, for instance. And I think maybe it's a necessary cut between, you know, Cribbs leaving, potentially leaving, probably leaving, and Dawson. It's a cut from the past and start to focus on the guys we have now that are supposed to be more impact players. You're not supposed to have the kicker be your favorite player. This is where, you know, you get more attached to Trent Richardson and Joe Hayden and Joe Thomas and those guys. And, you know, hopefully we see more of those jerseys. And I mean, not that Phil Dawson was a massive jersey seller, but, you know, maybe it's a necessary, evil him leaving the town. And I'm not crazy about it, but I guess that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, the only thing that I can say about it is that there is a remote chance that maybe Joe Banner knows what he's doing, but there's just no way for any Browns fan to feel confident that that's the case right now. Just no way.
And nope.
he was a guy, he is a guy who, you know, at a position that doesn't necessarily have to lose anything with age. And he was better in his later years. Yes, the rug will come out from under him someday. But it's just,
But you didn't see the Lions, for example, cutting bait with Jason Hansen. He kept getting older and older and older. He's in his 40s, but they knew he was a reliable kicker, so they just continued to keep him around. They didn't run him out because he was too old. And the thing about Banner seems to be, you know, he did the same thing with his punter and his kicker in Philadelphia. I was listening to your podcast with Scott earlier today, And you guys brought up a point that the honeymoon period with Banner is long over, and this isn't obviously going to help. Now, everybody, I think the handwriting was on the wall that both Cribbs and Dawson were going to be gone. But now that they're, you know, Cribbs will be gone soon. You know, he failed his physical to Cardinals. He'll be gone. Phil will be gone. And it's you know, they're signaling we're, you know, Joe Banner, Mike Lombardi, that's a, you know, new sheriffs in town. They're going to do things their way. And if you don't like it, tough.
Kirk, any final thoughts on Phil before we move on to the NCAA tournament?
No, not really. Just glad he's not still in the AFC North with another team. That would have been truly heartbreaking. And I wish him the best. I'll be pulling for the 49ers out of the NFC this year for sure.
Well, and it will be interesting to see how much Phil makes, because that pretty much ruled everybody in the AFC North other than the Browns and the Bengals. And you know the Bengals weren't going to pay they didn't, you know, they weren't going to pay for Phil Dawson, especially. Well, and they have a kicker anyway. So, all right. So,
well, he only got a 1 year deal. So, you know, it's not like they gave him 4 years, and you know, I'm sure he'll get a decent amount of money, but it's only 1 year contract. So,
okay, I hadn't seen any of the details on the contract yet. So, all right. TD's favorite time of the year. I'm assuming it's one of Kirk's favorite times of the year too, but TD is definitely, you know, he writes wahoo when the Indians do something big. I'm not sure what the comment is when March Madness begins, but do you want to tell everybody what you did for March Madness a year ago?
What did I, are you talking about when I went to the title game? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Or my son? What are we talking about here? Oh, just in general, how did I celebrate? I mean,
well, I believe you were sitting on the couch, and you were sitting on the couch for a reason. On Thursday.
Oh, you want to talk about it? Listen, I am not the first man in America that had a vasectomy the day before the NCAA tournament. I certainly won't last. And I have to tell you, there was no better time to do it. I have two beautiful, healthy children, and I wasn't planning on having any more. And the time was right, so I did it on Wednesday before the tournament. I sat on rotating bag of peas, basically Thursday and Friday. And by Saturday, I took my son to a birthday party Saturday. So, yeah, there's no better time to do it. So all you guys out there that don't want to have more kids, day before the tournament, that's it.
That's a commitment to the tournament. That's a commitment.
That's right.
And that's something that Kirk can aspire to.
What do you think, Kirk?
We'll,
come on.
We'll leave it at that. I'm not even 25 yet.
Hey,
so
in all seriousness.
That's not in on my to-do list right now.
I know.
All right. Well, let's start with
Kirk,
the homer.
I'm just busting your balls.
Oh. All right, I'm gonna take some control here. Let's start with the homer take. The Ohio State Buckeyes pulled the 2 seed. Kirk, first of all, what did you think about Ohio State's draw? And were you surprised that they pulled the 2?
No, I was not surprised they pulled the 2. In fact, I think they clinched the 2 by beating Michigan State, regardless of what would have happened on Sunday, especially because we've seen it before that sometimes these decisions absolutely have to be made before the Big Ten championship game is over with. So I think they had a pretty good idea that they were going to get the last number 2 seed. I thought they got a fantastic draw. Immediately when it came out, I thought of 2 years ago when, Sullinger's freshman year, where they got that absolute gauntlet that they would have had to, had they have continued to advance, they would have potentially had to go through Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, and Kansas to potentially win a title. And of course, they got beat by Kentucky after making it to the Sweet 16 on the Brandon Knight shot. Looking at this is the complete opposite. I think that Team Sullinger's freshman year was probably the most talented of the three, and this team's probably the least talented of the three, but this team may just have a better shot because of the who's in their bracket. You know, the two best teams are Gonzaga and New Mexico, and they're both mid-majors. Not to knock the mid-majors too much, but they haven't been playing in the Big Ten all year long, and I think we'll keep going with the Ohio State talk a little bit, so I'll let TD give his very informed opinion, because TD watches a lot more hoops than just Ohio State and Kansas, and he's got a better overall feel for it for sure.
All right, well, here's what I'll tell you about the Buckeyes while we're on the subject. So, you know, I wrote a piece for this on Monday, basically talking about their path. And I said this in the piece, as a Kansas fan, we got the number one seed in the South, but you look at our draw, I would have much rather have been the number two seed in the West, where Ohio State is. I would say as favorable of a draw as I can remember. With that said, all the years that KU used to get great draws, I remember we were the number one team in the country a couple years ago when we had with Sherron Collins' senior year. And in the second round, we lost to Northern Iowa. I remember seeing that draw thinking, oh, all we got to do is get past Northern Iowa in the second round. We're going to be golden. We're going to, you know, walk into the Final Four. That didn't happen. Then 2 years ago, when the Morris twins were leading our team, and Tyshawn Taylor was our was running the point. We had a number one seed, and again the path looked super simple. And then we lost to VCU in the Elite Eight, and I couldn't believe it. And we had dominated it all year. So sometimes when you see the easiest draw, you get all excited, and then it ends up not happening. So you never know. And I wrote this in the piece the other day. For Ohio State, the game I'm actually most concerned about is the Iowa State potential matchup in the round of 32, just because they play – I've watched Iowa State play probably 10 times this year. They play five out, nobody in the paint, space everything out. They have five guys on the floor that can shoot three-pointers at all times. Their center is a 6'11 banger who literally takes the center out, and he shoots three-pointers at like a 50% clip, Georges Niang. And they're a very, very dangerous hot-shooting team. They took Kansas to overtime twice. Both games they should have won if not for Ben McLemore hit a bank shot three at the buzzer to force overtime in one game, and then the infamous double overtime Elijah Johnson 39-point horribly officiated game in the other one. So that would be a concern of mine. But with that said, Ohio State actually matches up decently with them because they don't play two bigs. You know, DeShawn Thomas is obviously more of a stretch four, if you will. So I think if the Buckeyes can get past that second round matchup with Iowa State, I like their chances a lot against New Mexico. And then against Gonzaga, you know what? It's going to be tough. In my bracket that I filled out, I actually have Gonzaga going to the Final Four. I think this is a Gonzaga team that is, while they're a number one seed, I think nobody's buying into them. And they really have good talent. I've watched them a lot this year. They if they were in the Big Ten, they would have finished in the top four. I have no doubt about that. And they have a center in Kelly Olynyk, who is a matchup nightmare for just about anybody, because he's a 7-footer who's very, very athletic, shoots from the outside, strong moves in the post. So he'll be a tough out. But I love the Buckeyes draw, though. You got to like how things set up for them.
All right, so past the
definitely.
All right, this is going to be odd. Everyone's going to have to play a little bit of game of walkie-talkie, past the Buckeyes and Kansas, obviously we've got those two covered. The rest of the number one seeds, I mean, is this another tournament year? It seems like number one seeds and high seeds have done extraordinarily well. I mean, I don't know if that's unheard of or what. It just seems like, you know, the people who were able to take as many number one seeds to the Final Four and pick three out of the four hasn't been such a bad bet the last 4 or 5 years. I'll go to Kirk.
Well, let me take this one. Oh, go ahead.
But by all means, TD, go ahead first.
I'm sorry. Cause every time, just like delayed every time for some reason. So here's what I'll tell you. It's only been one – the history of the tournament since they expanded to 64 teams, it's only happened one time, 2008, where all four number one seeds have made the tournament – made the Final Four, excuse me. So, you know, it's usually you'll get a pair of them. And I think all of a sudden here's what I find most interesting about this draw. 7 days ago, Duke had not lost with Ryan Kelly in the lineup, and they were everybody's pick to win it, and everyone thought that they were, you know, unbeatable, borderline unbeatable. Then they lose a meaningless to them quarterfinal game to Maryland, a desperate team who was trying to get into the tournament in the ACC tournament. They lose that game, and now all of a sudden they fall to a 2 seed. Louisville goes on an incredible run, wins the Big East tournament, plays like gangbusters in the Big East championship, and now everybody has Louisville as the favorite. Things change that fast in 1 week. So that's one thing. If people are listening and they haven't filled out their brackets yet, don't forget that about Duke. I can't believe I'm doing it. I'm picking Duke to win the national championship for that reason. They have never flown under the radar like this, and they are very, very talented. Kirk, have at it.
I would say that it's an interesting year because we've heard how anyone can win this tournament this year, and I truly believe that because how many people picked Kentucky last year? And, you know, I knew Ohio State had a great team, had a great shot to get there, but I knew in my heart that if they were lucky enough to finish that game off against Kansas, they were going to get smoked just the same way Kansas did against Kentucky. But I also see that there weren't any teams that were left out of the tournament that I felt like, wow, they really should have been there. I was kind of underwhelmed by the teams in the bottom seeds of the tournament. Whereas it's a year that anyone can win it, I found myself not picking as many upsets into the second round. I actually, to continue on the 1 seed talk, I have no number 1 seeds in the final four. And I have 4 number 2 seeds in the final four.
Well, that's not so hard to figure out now, is it? All right. Well, so what's the I'm sorry to go kind of homer, but
no,
the only,
it's not.
The only thing I watch is the Big Ten. So what do you got? What do you think about the rest of the Big Ten, TD, Michigan and Michigan State and the rest?
Here's what I'll say. I think Indiana, they've been great all year. I got them in the Elite Eight losing to Miami. And the only reason I have them losing to Miami is, you know, Indiana's 3-3 in their last 6 games. They're not exactly peaking at the right time. And Miami's a veteran club that is very physical in the post, and that's the kind of team that's going to give Indiana trouble. Michigan State, unfortunately for them, I think they got a terrible draw. If they were the 3 in the West, for example, where New Mexico is, I would probably be picking them to go to the Final Four. You know, Izzo, no matter what kind of talent he has, you know, you can always count on him to make a deep tournament run. I don't think that they can get past I actually don't think that, you know, they're, for them to get to the Final Four, they're going to have to get past Duke and Louisville, who are arguably the 2 best teams in the country. I just don't see that happening. Michigan, they're the number 4 seed in the South. They get essentially 2 home games playing in Detroit. Their second game, however, is probably going to be against a VCU team that I am actually picking to go to the Final Four out of the South. They play a style that not many other teams have to deal with. They full court press all game. If there's one point guard in the country who can probably solve them, it's Trey Burke. But I just have a feeling that that VCU is going to take them down in the second round. So they got, and they're not, Michigan's not playing well either. I mean, they haven't won a game on the road. I think they won 1 Big Ten road game this year, if memory serves me correctly, since January. And then Wisconsin, I think, actually, of all the other teams besides Ohio State, Wisconsin probably has the most favorable draw. A lot of people are picking them to get to the Elite Eight, knock off Gonzaga. And I've seen them pick to go to the Final Four. I think they're going to end up in the Sweet 16 losing to Gonzaga. That Bo Ryan style, you know, Bo seems to know how to beat these Big Ten coaches. And he really has the Big Ten's number. But if you look at his past tourney success, he has not reached anything more than 1 Elite Eight. So, that style, sometimes they get out of the league and things change. I mean, they lost early in the year to Virginia at home. I mean, it's just a different story when you get out of the league sometimes. So that's what I think what's going to happen with those Big Ten teams. Minnesota will probably beat UCLA and not win another game. I think Illinois is going to lose to Colorado. But the year, the year the league had, this was the best we've ever seen it.
Kirk?
All right. To kind of go quick hitter here, I've got Illinois winning one game, Minnesota winning one game on the upset over UCLA, Michigan winning one game before losing to VCU like TD. I actually think they could get beaten the first round. South Dakota State is a is kind of a popular pick for people who are daring enough to go 13 over a 4. Michigan State, I kind of agree with TD. They're playing really tough right now. I've got them in the Sweet 16 losing to Duke. Let's see. IU, I've got in the Elite Eight losing to Miami of Florida. Same kind of thing, just lofty expectations. They're a good team, but, I mean, they're a fantastic team. They probably have the most talent out of anybody. But I just see them maybe forgetting about going down to Zeller, and maybe Zeller gets into foul trouble. We had kind of talked about this a little bit behind the scenes about Big Ten refs and how physical the play is, and they let so much go, and then these Big Ten teams get in the tournament, as Andrew had said, and they find themselves in foul trouble, and that's happened so much with Sullinger and Odin all through the years with Ohio State since Mott has been there. It seems like that's kind of happened where their big guys gotten picked on a little bit, and that could certainly happen with IU. Wisconsin, I think they really could beat Gonzaga. I did not pick that. I got them to the Sweet 16, knocking off Ole Miss and K-State. But to kind of go through where I have Ohio State, Iowa State, I think the one thing TD mentioned about them going five around the perimeter and nobody inside, that absolutely plays into the way that Thad Mott has wanted to play lately with no big men on the floor. In the Big Ten tournament, he, you know, the last crunch time in the last two games, he pulled Ravenel and Amir Williams off the floor. Deshaun Thomas was playing the center position, and they absolutely, Michigan State and Wisconsin had no answer for it, and it was a matchup nightmare. So that's how I have them getting past a tough Iowa State team. That may end up being their toughest game for a few games. New Mexico is a team that struggles offensively, but they definitely get to the line with regularity. But I think that kind of plays into Ohio State's motto defensive philosophy to defend without fouling. And if they can keep them off the line, I see them getting by them. And then Gonzaga is an incredibly tough team. I've only seen them play two or three times, but Olynyk is just an amazing player, and they've got a really strong backcourt. But what some people may forget is that Ohio State beat this Gonzaga team minus Olynyk, but with Robert Sacre at center instead last year in the tournament by 8 points. And Kraft absolutely shut down Pangos. I believe he was 2 of 9 or 2 of 10 from the field. And Gary Bell Jr. and Stockton, their entire backcourt just had a nightmare of a game. And that was without Shannon Scott playing big minutes. And I think they've even got better defensively in the backcourt. Olynyk's going to be tough, and he's probably going to get Ohio State's front court into some sort of foul trouble. But I see Ohio State progressing to the Final Four. And I told myself I wasn't going to do this, but I did end up picking Ohio State to win their second national championship, the first since 1960. And I did that by virtue of beating Duke, who they played incredibly tough at Cameron Indoor, lost by 5 as they went in an absolute cold spell in the second half, and Mason Plumlee got physical inside. And then I have them beating Miami of Florida in the championship game.
Can I respond to that Homer yeah. pick?
I was just gonna.
Yes, you can.
I was just gonna say, spoken like a true Homer. and I'll let you respond to that. But I also like you, TD, to talk about the fact that Ohio State is on an 8-game winning streak. But it doesn't. I've watched a lot of those games. I haven't caught every minute of every one, but they don't necessarily feel like a just a raging inferno on fire type of a team, even though, I mean, all that matters in the end are wins. But so speak to that. How do you think that run through the tournament might actually translate into momentum into the NCAA tournament?
Well, look, they're playing their best basketball at the right time. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they're peaking right now. I mean, if you look back in February, they lost 3 of 4. They literally, if you looked at their wins, they really hadn't had any real quality wins. And then they went on that great streak where they beat Indiana, they beat Wisconsin, they beat Michigan, and they beat Michigan State. So they're definitely playing their best basketball at the right time. That said, this is a team that really struggles to score. If you can if you can lock down DeShaun Thomas, the team does have a hard time scoring, and they are an easier team to beat. I mean, if you look at how Kansas played them earlier in the year and last year, they keyed more on Thomas than they did on Sullinger because they figured, you know, last year at least, and it worked out. And Thomas did not have great games. And in earlier this year, Thomas was ice cold against us too. I think that while they are playing great, I think that sometimes you get out of the conference where the coaches know each other's tendencies so well, and you end up playing a team like an Iowa State, for example, who plays this five-out different style, and these guys come out and they're red-hot shooting. All it that's the biggest problem that Ohio State could have is if they end up getting into a track meet with Iowa State in the second round, for example, that's not the game they want to play, and Iowa State forces you to play their style. It's not the style Kansas wanted to play either. Both times, I mean, we like to keep games in the high 60s, low 70s. Both times we played, I think I know one of them was 90-90 at the end of regulation. So, I just think that if you, Kirk, you're going through, you're saying that this team is going to beat Duke, Miami, Gonzaga. I mean, that's a tall order for a team that really is kind of one-dimensional on the offensive end. I'm not denying that they're playing great defensively and that Kraft is the best on-ball defender in the game, but I think that's a really tall order, and I think if they weren't in the West region with that draw, nobody would be picking them to go as far as they are.
And TD, I wouldn't be picking them. I think I kind of talked myself into it with how weak the West was, and I think more than anything, like I kind of said before, with last year's team and 2 years ago, those teams seem to be riding high more, and when they hit tough spells in the tournament, they were done. They hit cold spells, and they didn't know how to handle them because they were just juggernauts all year long, scoring the basketball and just going to Sullinger and imposing will in the post. And I think this team has tasted their blood in their own mouth more times than the last two teams have. And I think it's going to benefit them because I've seen some teams that, you know, have taken their licks and they make a deep tourney run because they know what happens when things go bad, and they know when it starts to happen, how to handle it. Ohio State didn't score a field goal for 7 minutes against Michigan State. For the last 7.5 minutes, they had a 7-minute field goal drought, and Thomas hit that one jumper, and that was it for him in the last 7.5 minutes from the field, and they still found a way to win. DeShaun Thomas is actually shooting only 17% from three-point range in the last 8 games. So DeShaun Thomas has not been playing that well, but Sam Thompson, LaQuinton Ross, Evan Ravenel to a certain extent, but Aaron Kraft, they've all been stepping it up on the offensive end. Lenzel Smith's been struggling for quite some time too, where I thought he could be maybe the second scorer on this team. There's no definite reliance on a second score. It's Thomas, and then it's whoever else steps up to the occasion. Now, obviously, they could go out as soon as the second round if no one steps up, and you know their awesome defense can't stop good 3-point shooting. That's certainly possible. But the way they throw two people at you, at Kraft and Scott, Shannon Scott, I was really impressed and kind of surprised that Scott earned all defensive honors in the conference. But he definitely deserves it, even coming off the bench. He's just as good of a defender as Kraft is. He gets even more steals than Kraft does. I mean, granted, some of those are knockaways from Kraft, but that 1-2 punch to shut down a team's 1-2 guard, no one else can offer that, and I think it's going to help them big time come the tourney.
And that's where they really stepped up their play, was when Scott started getting more minutes, and putting Kraft and Scott together in the backcourt was just that was the big difference. I mean, that's really when they took off defensively and they started to win all those ball games.
All right, so let's take it this way. No homer picks. Tell me, so no Kansas, no Ohio State. What do you think, what's the game that you think is going to be most entertaining that people should be keeping an eye out to make sure that they catch as the tournament begins in the opening round? TD, you first.
We talking just early on games here?
Yep.
First round?
First round. I don't want you to project too far ahead.
I'm sorry. The round of 64, which is, you know, one of the dumbest things that's ever been, you know, let's call it what it is. It's the first round. The game, I'll tell you, the game I'm most intrigued in watching, I'll give you a couple. Oklahoma State and Oregon. I think Oregon is terribly underseeded as a 12, and I loved Oklahoma State as kind of a chic Final Four pick, except for the fact that they were put in that brutal Midwest bracket. That'll be a great game to watch. Oklahoma State with Marcus Smart, who could potentially be the first pick overall in the draft, depending on who gets it there. North Carolina and Villanova, an 8-9 game in the South, will be very entertaining too. What North Carolina, when they went to their small lineup, they decided to move P.J. Harrison to the four and James Michael McAdoo at center, and they've kind of gone to that Iowa State, spacing, shooting a lot of threes. They went 8-2 with that lineup, so they're playing good ball. And Nova beat four top five teams this year, so that could be a very interesting game. And then, if you're talking upsets, I like Davidson over Marquette. I think that'll be a very highly entertaining game of 14-3.
Are you going to leave any for Kirk?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I've just given you three games. That's all. I'm going to stop talking now.
I'm just busting on you. Go ahead, Kirk.
All right. Well, funny that TD mentions that Marquette Davidson one, because I actually picked Davidson too. That's kind of my bracket of doom over there. I've got Davidson, Montana, and Bucknell all winning. So three double digit seeds winning. I really want to see that Michigan South Dakota State game. I think that's going to be a thrilling game. I think Michigan has a chance to get knocked off. Not that I'm necessarily pulling for that. I'd like to see the Big Ten teams advance as far as possible. I had Oregon, Oklahoma State Mark too. And I guess, another Big Ten one would be Wisconsin Ole Miss. I like the Henderson kid from Ole Miss, and be interesting to see if he can escape the vortex of Wisconsin slowing the game down. And I've actually, Wisconsin, I've got them winning that game, but that'll be a good one to watch.
All right, TD, I got one personal question for you, because my in-laws used to live on Butler's campus, and I used to jog around there. And they're a sixth seed this year. Is that based on previous reputation? Because it seemed to me that they kind of struggled throughout the year a little bit here and there, huh?
Well, they were ranked as high as 11 during the year. They play, they gave Gonzaga their last loss, which they beat Gonzaga without their best player, Rodney Clark. But they struggled in the A-10 down the stretch. I mean, they only finished, I think they were the fifth seed in the A-10 tournament. VCU throttled them twice. They're not playing well right now, and they don't really have that star player that they had in Gordon Hayward or Shelvin Mack in years past, or Matt Howard even. They don't really have they're more of a, Clark is their best player. Kellen Dunham is an unbelievable shooter, but they're not playing as well as they have going into the tournament in years past. So, I actually think they're going to lose to Bucknell in the first round, because they don't have Andrew Smith is a nice player in the interior, but Bucknell's got this kid, Mike Muscala, who's going to be a first round draft pick. And he's a big skilled center. And I think they're going to have trouble with him. So, that's that. When you were talking a second ago, when you said you were hoping the Big Ten did well, Kirk, this is actually an interesting conversation. And I'll ask both of you, Craig, I'll ask you first. So if you're a Buckeye fan, do you root for other – and I'm not talking just college basketball. Do you root for the other Big Ten teams in bowl games to do well despite their rivals or the NCAA tournament? What is your take on that?
I'll go first. I will generally root for a Big Ten team in a football bowl. It's much, much more difficult to root for Big Ten teams in the NCAA tournament because, those are the teams that if – you just don't want to see them – with a chance to have basically an in-division game at somewhere along the line against the Buckeyes. I know it's – when was the last time the Buckeyes played another Big Ten team in the NCAA tournament?
Well, I know they played Michigan in 1992 to go to the Final Four and with the Fab Five when Jimmy Jackson was there, and Ohio State lost. So okay. I know that. I mean, I'm sure there's been – well, actually, maybe there hasn't been an instance since.
I doubt there has been, TD. I mean, I would say dating back to – I started following around that 99 Final Four year that got scrubbed away, and I don't remember any.
Well, I remember Michigan State played Wisconsin one year in the Final Four. See, the thing is when there's – there's never been a year like this where the Big Ten has had this many quality teams that are rated that are high seeds. So normally you're not going to run into another high seeded conference team unless it's at the earliest the Elite Eight. That's the earliest that's just how things work. So I bet that's the last time. It'd be something interesting to look up.
Let me jump in on the conference question. I absolutely root for other Big Ten teams to do well in football because of all the ESPN hatred that's gone on with the Big Ten, and I mean, a lot of it's deserved, but some of it is just contrived and over the top and hyperbole. And I definitely root for them because it makes Ohio State look better after winning all those Big Ten, you know, championships. I think the Big Ten's better when Michigan's good. I hate Michigan as much as the next Buckeye, but to kind of shift gears to the basketball, last week when Michigan's layup spun out, so Indiana held on, and instead of a eventual would have been four-way split in the regular season title between Michigan State, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio State, Indiana won it outright because Michigan blew free throws down the stretch and couldn't finish off Indiana at home for an undefeated home season. I was really upset. If anyone who follows me on Twitter knows, I was really upset. And
you got upset on Twitter? Get out of here.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy notion, but I had a couple people who said, you know, I won't root for Michigan at all, no matter what's on the line. And I can respect that in a certain sense because I have friends like that, but I couldn't do it. A regular season title, getting four in a row, which is what the Buckeyes would have done, would have been the first since Michigan State 98-01. It's a program builder. You put another banner up. It only increases Thad Matta's clout in recruiting. It would have been so huge. And some people said, well, you weren't playing for it. You were already done. That it would have just been kind of a consolation. It doesn't matter if you share it. I call bull on that. It would have been just as thrilling. Obviously, you want to win it on the floor, and Ohio State had their chances. They should have not blundered it away in East Lansing when Shannon Scott put up a prayer that he airballed and panicked when he tried to pass to Thomas. They should have, you know, executed better down the stretch in Ann Arbor and got that win too, and they shouldn't have got blown out by Illinois on the road. But the fact is, it was there. Michigan almost did them the return favor of that Ohio State did them the year before in East Lansing when they won themselves a share of the regular season title along with Michigan in the three-way split. And I felt like I was taking crazy pills as these people were poo-pooing a regular season title just because, oh yeah, Michigan lost, they blew it, they choked. You know what? So what? No one remembers that in the in future years, but they'll see the banner hanging in the Schottenstein Center had it gone down otherwise.
You know, Kirk, I'm glad you recognize that because my Twitter timeline after the Burke layup or the tip in by Jordan Morgan rimmed out, my timeline was flooded with Ohio State fans going, "Ooh, of course we couldn't count on Michigan to take care of business," and Jared Sullinger and Dallas Lauderdale. You retweeted a bunch of these, and that's how I saw them, these players.
Well, of course I did.
you know what? You know what? Take care of your own business, and this isn't a problem. One of my best friends in the world is a Michigan grad, huge Michigan fan, and when they missed, I told him all year, I said, you take care of business at home, you know, hold serve at home, you will win the Big Ten, because the way this league works – if you hold serve at home, everyone else is going to lose probably one game. If you can hold serve, you'll get a piece of the title. And they didn't, and that's what happened. So it's the same thing, you know. But these people that were like mad at Michigan because, God forbid, they, you know, they lost to the number one team at the buzzer. I mean, I know Michigan, Ohio State and Michigan fans hate each other, but take care of your own business. Don't worry about what the other teams do. You handle your own business and you're fine.
All right, let's finish this on one final topic. I want to know, again, this is me speaking from my ignorance, because I don't follow the tournament, and I certainly don't remember it from year to year like you do, TD. Talk to me a little bit about how big of a deal it is that Kentucky misses the tournament this year, from winning it all to not even being in it the next year. Is this normal, or is this kind of shocking?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I see a couple of things. Number one, you know, Calipari has this – basically, he's kind of become this, you know, NBA one-and-done coach where, you know, these kids who only want to go to college for 1 year go to him because he puts players in the NBA. And, you know, I actually work with a guy who's a big Kentucky fan, and I asked him about it, and I, you know, how he feels. And he said, you know, I want to win championships. I don't – you know, he wants to win championships first and then worry about the NBA guys next. Calipari wants to put guys in the NBA first, and he says it, and he doesn't apologize for saying it. This year's – you know, what people don't understand and about this year's team compared to last year's team, everybody talked about, oh, you know, they did it with all these freshmen last year. Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist were two transcendent freshmen. I have never seen a guy with the heart and desire and the ability with a limited offensive game to take over a game like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist did. And then Anthony Davis is a once-in-a-20-year kind of talent. He was a point guard, basically a shooting guard who grew 10 inches in 2 years, became the best shot blocker in the country, and the best rebounder in the country, and the guy was a beast. But what people always seem to forget about that team, they had three players in Deron Lamb, Darius Miller, and Terrence Jones, who were sophomore, senior, who were key players in the year before on a team that went to the Final Four. So it's not like Calipari just got five freshmen, took them all in, they all went to the Final Four and won a championship. So this year, I think that perception was, it doesn't matter because Cal will just reload. He brought in a bunch of talented pieces that never molded. So these kids, he returned, basically the only one who returned from last year was this Kyle Wiltshire, who is a spot up, you know, wing guy who isn't an athlete. He's a four-year college player. The guys he brought in this year were kind of, you know, they didn't buy into the system. They were me-first guys, didn't buy into the team. And then Nerlens Noel, who was terrific. They'd be in the tournament if Noel didn't get hurt, first of all. If Noel doesn't get hurt, there's no way they miss the tournament. So I think that has a lot to do with it. But next year is going to be where it's the most interesting because he right now has five five-star recruits coming in. And tomorrow, Julius Randle, who's the top big man, number two overall player in the class, announces between Kansas, Kentucky, and Florida. And 50% of the people say it's going to be Kansas. 50% of the people say it's going to be Kentucky. If he goes to Kentucky next year, they're going to be preseason number one again with basically nobody returning because this group that Cal has, he wants to run all these guys out. Other than Noel and Willie Cauley-Stein, who are both going to be top 15 picks, he wants to get rid of the rest of these guys, and they're going to be either, you know, go to the NBA or be banished to the bench. So it's interesting. I don't know which way it goes, but I think it's a huge deal that they're not in. This is a blue blood program that, you know, should never miss the tournament no matter how injured they get.
Kirk?
I would start out by saying there are few coaches I loathe more than John Calipari. Getting that out of the way. I hate the fact that we have one and done factories like Kentucky. I realize it's the nature of the beast, and obviously, drawing back to Ohio State, Thad Matta's done this as well with Odin and what we thought was Sullinger before he decided to come back. The Odin Conley Cook class all left after 1 year in 2006-2007, but. I respect the teams that can get those guys and supplement them with senior and junior leaders. You look at how Ohio State got to the Final Four the last two times. They had Odin, Conley, Cook in that freshman class, but they also had Ron Lewis and Jamar Butler that were senior leaders and absolutely won them tournament games. And you look back to last year, sure, Sullinger, Kraft, and Thomas were sophomores by that time. They had a team that was probably Final Four, was definitely capable of making the Final Four the freshman year, but then they had Buford as a as a I wouldn't really call him a senior leader, but he was a senior that year. And you know, it's that mix that I kind of like with Ohio State, and I think that next year when Kraft's a senior, or even the year after that when the large class that they have full of sophomores are seniors, maybe that's another class that hopefully Thad can get another big recruiting class in and supplement that. I know they have the Ohio Division I Player of the Year, Mark Loving from Toledo St. John's, coming in next year. So that could be a good mix where, you know, they have Kraft and Smith and Scott, a really experienced backcourt, coming back. And if Deshaun Thomas somehow decides to come back, I know TD thinks he's absolutely gone, and he's definitely not alone in that. But I'd like to see him come back and, you know, work on his defense a little more, work on his handle so he can be an effective stretch four in the NBA. And if he does come back for his senior year, Ohio State's looking at really another good team next year. But, yeah, to sum it up, I'm not a big fan of the one and done factories. I like to see a program that uses it as a supplemental.
All right. I think that should about wrap it up. I'll give you guys final words each.
You want to give our final four picks? I know you said them already, but give me the actual teams. And you too, Craig.
I don't have them.
What?
I didn't do it
yet.
Come
on, Craig.
I didn't do it yet.
Well, you'll have to let everyone on Twitter know what you end up going with.
All right. I will do that. Go ahead, TD.
Okay. I have, you know, I went over this many, many times because I'm a sicko with this stuff. I'm going with Duke over Louisville in the Midwest bracket to get to the Final Four. I got Gonzaga over Ohio State in the West. I got VCU over Florida, which is going to be it's either boom or bust for me. VCU over Florida, which means I'm not going homer like Kirk. I think Kansas is going to lose in the Sweet 16. And I have Miami over Indiana in the East. And then my championship game, Duke over Miami in the championship.
All right, and before I go to Kirk, so you said I didn't give you a lot of Kansas time. So you think Kansas is going to get knocked out when?
Here's what I think. If VCU beats Michigan in the second round, round of 32, and Kansas has to play VCU in the Sweet 16, Kansas will be out. It's the worst possible matchup because of Kansas's lack of point guard. Any time that we had to face pressure this year, which wasn't very often, we were like a turnover machine. And that's my biggest concern. That was literally, there were two teams I did not want to see in my draw, Louisville and VCU. And we got one of them. So if that's the case, I think we'll lose. If Michigan ends up beating VCU, I'd say KU will end up in the Final Four. But I'm picking VCU.
All right, Kirk.
All right. I'll make this easy. I've got all ones and twos in my Elite Eight. I hated to do that. Absolutely. Every year I say you can't do that. But I just looked for someone. I thought about Michigan State, but I just think Duke's too good. Thought about Florida, but they can't win a close game. I thought about Michigan, but I think they might get knocked off in the first round. And so I have my Final Four is all number two seeds. I have Duke beating Louisville, Ohio State beating Gonzaga, Georgetown beating Kansas, Miami, Florida beating Indiana. Have Ohio State, Miami, Florida in the championship game, and Ohio State cutting down the nets in Atlanta. And I realize that's a homer pick. I won't shy away from that, but I think in this wide open year, I've seen Ohio State go into the tournament since that Ma's been here as the best team and not have it happen. So this is going to be the year where they're not the best overall team and they make it happen.
All right. Well, I guess my outsider perspective, it's certainly possible for Ohio State to make it all the way. They're one of the better teams. My experience watching the tournament tells me that Ohio State doesn't have the three-point shooting talent to survive this entire tournament as the champion. That's my outsider layman perspective. Because it's usually one of those ridiculous three-point shooting teams. I can't leave with me sounding like an expert because I'm the dumbest one on this call. So
they had that 2 years ago, Craig, and they got knocked out. So that's kind of what my logic.
Okay, so
all you know what, Craig? All it takes. You're right, though. In the tournament, it all it takes is one hot shooting team to beat you. It's like when when Kansas lost to VCU 2 years ago, they made 9 threes against us in the first half, and we were so stunned by it. We never, you know, we were down 13. We used all of our energy to come back, and every time we kept getting close, they just hit another three. And that's why that Iowa State second round game against Ohio State is so dangerous. They made averaged 10 threes a game, most in the country.
Wow. All right. Well, it should be a fun tournament. I know it's going to be a fun tournament for TD because every tournament's a fun tournament for TD. And it'll be a fun tournament for Kirk if Ohio State wins it all.
Absolutely, Craig. Here's hoping.
I want to say one last thing before we go. I think that the Indians need to trade Ubaldo Jimenez for a bag of baseballs.
Cut him.
Someone will give you a low-level prospect for a $5.75 million fit starter. Get rid of him.
Plus ERA.
And sign Kyle Loesch, 1 year, $10 million. Let's do it.
And with that, if you're going to wait for any year, make sure you're waiting for next year. This has been the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast.